When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
One surprising streak stays alive for the Cardinals after nearly a full month of baseball as the Redbirds take the opener in Queens on Friday night. Coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you. It's now the early morning hours of Saturday, April 27th, 2024. Cardinals coming off another win as they got it done on Friday night in the Apple TV game in New York. Cardinals-Mets getting things going in a series at Citi Field. Cardinals coming off that series win over the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I continue to talk about how it just didn't feel like a series win for the Cardinals in the midweek matchup against Arizona. Got the walk-off on Monday, lost in just really awful fashion on Tuesday night, 14-1. And then Wednesday, they get the win to secure the series in that day game against Jordan Montgomery and company. But it just didn't feel like, for whatever reason, the momentum was quite the same. I think it's because the Cardinals in the two wins had to come from behind, and you spent a good portion of both games thinking that it wasn't going to go well. You obviously remember that in the end, they win both of those contests, but it just kind of was a grind. It was a tough way to get there, which in theory should make you feel even better about it as a Cardinal fan, right? But it just was kind of a slog of a series, and then you get the day off, which I think the team could appreciate for the travel day there out to New York. And once you kick that game off on Friday night, 51 hours after you concluded the previous game on Wednesday, you can do so going, all right, why not have a little momentum going? Why not us right now as the St. Louis Cardinals? And, you know, if you were a pessimist, you would say, well, the reason that it might not be you on Friday night, St. Louis Cardinals, is Miles Michaelis, who had struggled pretty severely coming into this game. Had a 6.49 ERA for the season. And you look over his last couple of outings, gives up a 5 spot in both of them while failing to get through the 5th inning in both of his 2 previous starts. But Miles was back to the prior form. Fortunately for the Cardinals on Friday night, didn't quite get the quality start, fell one out short of that in the 6th inning, but 5 2/3, 2 earned runs, both coming on some solo home runs that he gave up, which is not necessarily an unusual stat for Miles. Gave up 3 home runs in the last game he pitched on April 20th against Milwaukee, but that's something that's gotten him. He's given up 7 home runs now on the season, but couple of solo jobs do not hurt you. That's where you can certainly live with it, and Miles Michaelis was able to live with it tonight. Gives up just those 2 runs and gets the win as the Cardinals take down the Mets 4-2 in a game that had a lot of those same characteristics. This game is not one the Cardinals trailed in, so you can mark that change down. But everything else was very similar to some of the recent games that the Cardinals have been able to win. When they win, it's like they don't really win with very much flair or a cushion. You know, they're just kind of riding the rail. They're wire to wire. You're feeling a little bit uneasy even in the 9th inning. Although, I don't know that as a Cardinal fan, anybody should be uneasy right now when Ryan Helsley steps on the pitcher's mound with a lead. That guy's been unbelievable. And I teased it a little bit at the beginning here in the intro. The stat continues. As the Cardinals are 12-14 on the season, they've won 12 games. Ryan Helsley has pitched in all 12 of those Cardinal wins. Now, I don't think that is something that can be sustained throughout the entire season unless you end up with a pretty poor record, because for as much as I think the Cardinals are doing a great job of how they're utilizing Ryan Helsley this year, realistically, I don't think you see him pitching in 85, 87 games. So if it's, and by the way, he's pitched in two games the Cardinals have lost. But every time he's come in there in the ninth inning with a lead, he's been able to lock it down so far. It's been those games that Helsley has come in for the 10th inning in a tie situation, but with the Manfred man, the extra bonus base runner on there to begin extra inning, that's when it's kind of burnt the Cardinals. That run has come around to score a couple of times against Helsley, and the Cardinals have lost both those games. But that's even something that's hard to hold against the guy, too. He did give up an earned run when it happened against Philly. I've talked about this a number of times. His ERA is 1.93, but if you look back at the way that that 10th inning unfolded back on April the 8th against Philadelphia, it was the game where Alec Bohm, and I'll forever get his name wrong. It's Alec Bohm. That's how you say the man's name. But when it's not top of mind and I try to bring him up, I just freeze on the name every time. Did anybody else do this? I don't do this with other players, but it's just looking at the B-O-H-M. Something about the way I'm a visual learner in my head. I don't really know what it is. Got the photographic memory. I look at that and I go, Bohm, Bohm. It's Bohm. It's right there in the name. B-O-H-M. I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway, Bohm hit that ball right over the third base bag. Just barely kept it fair. That was after Bryce Harper had been intentionally walked. And so the intentionally walked Bryce Harper is the run that ultimately came around to score. The other run that came around to score. Cardinals lost that game 5-3. So that was an earned run against Helsley that if you take that one away, he hasn't allowed an earned run since, what, the first game he pitched of the season. Because I guess that's true. I had said earlier that anytime he comes in the ninth inning, he's gotten it done. But there was that ninth inning against the Dodgers out in L.A. where Helsley gave up a couple of runs. But now I got to pull that back up on the box score and see if I'm remembering that correctly. Yeah, the Cardinals had the lead. He blows the I guess it's a blown save because it was the bottom of the ninth and they ended up going to extras, but the Cardinals won that game. So he got the win, I guess, the way that panned out. Anyway, kind of a crazy stat, but it remains a stat right now through 26 games that the Cardinals, if they're going to win a game, it's going to have to include Ryan Helsley on the mound. Kind of crazy, but he's now up to, what, 8 saves on the season, 1.93 ERA. Like I said, you can even knock that down another run if you're going to be generous, which I tend to be in this case because I think there's an easy way to explain. He doesn't intentionally walk Bryce Harper if Rob Manfred doesn't say, yeah, put my guy on second to kick off the 10th inning. So it's the only earned run that scored against him since March 30th, or after March 30th, I should say, was a guy that was put on, you know, you didn't even pitch to him. The manager said, send him to first. So Ryan Helsley has been unbelievable, fantabulous, awesome for the Cardinals. And by the way, on the YouTube channel, and I put this up on Spotify too, I'm not sure what I'm going to call this, if I'm going to continue doing this with Josh Jacobs. A lot of you guys might also listen to the podcast he's involved with. It's called Dealing the Cards. They used to call their podcast Newt News, and they changed the name of it, changed the branding on it to Dealing the Cards, which I thought was a good move because you don't want to necessarily have your whole brand surrounding one player if that player should get traded or whatever. Not that anybody thinks Newt is going anywhere anytime soon. But those guys have been having some success with growing their... Really, I think they just do live streams. So if you're in the mood for live streams at some point, and I haven't posted one recently enough for you, keep your eyes peeled for those guys, and you can listen to their live stream, and then you can just wake up the next day and listen to my podcast. See, that'd be fair. Be good enough. So anyway, we're talking with Josh today, and I want to kind of spend a moment here to give the caveat for people who might see the title of that video. And I titled it something like, could this version of a Cardinals rebuild for 2025 make a lot of sense, and might it actually be kind of fun too. And we talked about it in terms of a hypothetical. If the Cardinals don't turn it around in 2024 and they decide they're going to have to tear it down a little bit, what could that look like? And then I got a lot of comments from people saying, well, why are we being so negative about the Cardinals? Why do you think they're going to? No. I said in the video, fellas and ladies, I said in the video that I am not in a spot where I'm predicting the Cardinals are not going to pull this thing off. If anything, people accuse me of being too optimistic and saying, hey, let's just wait this out and see. But I thought it would be a really interesting conversation, because as long as we said off the top, hey, this is hypothetical, this is not a prediction that the Cardinals are going to have a bad year, but let's allow ourselves to get, you know, slip into that mindset for a moment, or for an hour it ended up being, and really think through what could that look like. So that's not a B-Shape Daily Pod. Like I said, I don't know what I'm going to call it if I keep doing a podcast with Josh. I think Josh is really, really a sharp guy. He runs the he's a Cardinals fan and runs the fan-sided site, Redbird Rants. I think he's kind of in charge of that, or an editor for that nowadays, and does some articles for those guys. But a sharp guy and a good guy to kind of go back and forth with on podcasts. So let me know, too, what you guys thought of that video, and go give that some love. It's the video on YouTube that has Heim Bloom in the thumbnail. I kind of had a little bit of fun with the thumbnail on that one, which, spoiler alert, you know, if the Cardinals have that sort of rebuild vision, I think Heim Bloom could be prominently featured in it. And we talk about in the video very extensively, by the way, why that is. I almost think I should clip off just that part of the conversation and make it its own video, just because I think it's so interesting. And people might get a bit of a kick out of, like, why I come to the conclusion that Heim Bloom might be prominently featured. Maybe it's some obvious stuff that people already know, and we beat the dead horse on stuff that people already know. Or maybe it's, never really thought of it that way. There are a lot of parallels to, you know, maybe what Bill DeWitt could be looking for in the next voice of the Cardinals, whenever that should be. We know Mo's contract goes through 2025, but something kind of interesting to think about. You can check that out on the channel as well. And quick plug for the Spotify version of B-Shape Daily. A couple people have signed up for this already, but you can listen to the podcast without ads, which I know they can be inundating and boring and tedious if you like to skip through them or whatever, but there is a way to do that, and you can be supporting the work that I do at the same time and getting a little bit of bang for your buck on that. So check that out. The link is in the description if you're interested in ad-free listening to B-Shape Daily. Okay, back to the show. I know, people say, your whole show is just a commercial. Yeah, well, we got to pay the bills. All right, here's the deal. I shifted into that tangent a few minutes ago because I was talking to Ryan Helsley, and it reminded me that in that other video, Josh sort of had the thought of, well, I wonder if the Cardinals would ever consider, especially if they went into maybe a lower payroll mode where you had to get creative to try and come up with some answers for things like the starting rotation, would they ever consider moving Helsley back to a starter like we've seen the Giants do when they signed Jordan Hicks in free agency, former flame-throwing closer, was also a former minor league starter, and would that be something that maybe the Cardinals could do with Helsley to be creative and maybe get a guy who could be a really effective five-and-dive sort of starting pitcher in this league, which can get you pretty far nowadays, right? Isn't that what we're asking Steven Matz to do every fifth day? Not necessarily having a ton of success with him over his last couple of starts doing that, but kind of an interesting concept there. But man, Ryan Helsley, just in terms of the Cardinals saying, yes, we will use you as the traditional closer this year, they're getting a lot of value and bang for their buck from him. And again, to say he's pitched in every win is kind of, again, it speaks a little bit to the fact that Cardinals have not won as many games as you would have hoped at this point. They're under 500 still. Only two games under, so getting a couple wins in a row in three of the last four, if you go back to the beginning of the Arizona series, that's good. But yeah, they've won fewer games than you'd like to see, and so that's probably not sustainable if you're going to make the playoffs to have a relief pitcher pitch in every single game that you win all year. But they started the season on March 28th, and today's April 27th, so it's damn near a month that they've sustained that. And it's a credit to Ryan Helsley as much as it is a way to go, okay, maybe they should win some more games that they don't need him in. But it's also a discussion of the types of games the Cardinals have been winning. Only Marmol answered a question about this, I think it was Wednesday, as to if that's kind of indicative. That game Wednesday, that again, Montgomery got the start for Arizona. The Cardinals kind of got to him late. We did the podcast about Contreras, was able to kind of be the guy to break through on Montgomery a little bit in that sixth inning, I think it was, whatever inning it was. And after trailing, they're able to break through late. They add on with some insurance late and some timely hitting. Nootbaar had a bases loaded hit that scored a couple more runs down the stretch, and they win the game 5-1. And Ollie was asked if that type of win was indicative of the kinds of games the Cardinals are going to have to scrape out and win over the course of the season. And is that a win in particular that looks very much like a 2024 Cardinals-y win? And I probably misframed the question as I sort of paraphrase it, but that was the gist of it, if I recall correctly. And Ollie said basically affirmative, like that is the kind of game that we're going to have to find ways to win. Now, that can be grating and grueling for a team to have a game where the offense doesn't get it going early and you have to stick with it, which is a characteristic that last year's team maybe didn't have quite as much. When they would get down early, it was the mindset of, oh boy, here we go again. It's not to say that it was that way every time, but it was sort of a characteristic that you recognized by the end of the year of, yeah, if you're trailing by a couple few runs, it's probably not going to be your day. That was just kind of the way it went for the Cardinals last year. They got into early holes and they stayed there more often than not. But to be able to kind of grind through some at-bats in the middle of a game and turn it around and then hold it there with the bullpen late, is that maybe the recipe for the Cardinals? And I think, yes, it is. It's going to have to be because the good teams, the best teams, will find ways to win those sorts of games. But eventually, I do think it's fair to say that you'd like to see the Cardinals be able to win in a different style, where it's not a save situation, for crying out loud. Be able to win a game where you pull away and you do so early even. You jump on the board first. You get to the opposing starter first. It's not like pulling teeth to be able to get a little offense going. Those are the kinds of games. And so the Cardinals, to their credit, did that tonight. Alec Burleson, man, and I understand he's a controversial, a bit of a polarizing figure because he gets at bats. He's been a guy that the Cardinals and Ollie Marmol have at times put up pretty high in the batting order going back to last season relative to his experience level. Whereas with other guys like Jordan Walker and Mason Winn, historically, you see those guys pretty low in the order. And it's like at times last year, Burleson was up in the two hole. I mean, I think part of it is the lefty bat and Ollie's sort of preference to do that left-right thing. And so he would be pushing Burley up in the lineup at times last year when he was looking to get a lefty bat in there a little bit earlier in the mix. But tonight he was in the six hole. He was batting ahead of Nolan Gorman, which after the home run that he hit tonight, the production on the year is unequivocally better than Nolan Gorman, 662 OPS compared to 621. But I don't think that was the case coming into the game. Nevertheless, a polarizing figure because some people look at Alec Burleson and say, you know, I don't understand. What are the Cardinals seeing in this guy? I'm looking at the numbers and I'm not getting it. Others say, well, the batted ball data is really good. You can see that he takes good quality at bats when he's up there. He's hit into some bad luck that's caused him to maybe have lesser numbers than he otherwise would have in certain games. And I really like me some Alec Burleson. And I remember, I've talked about this on the podcast, but when we do the pre-games with Ollie Marmol in his office, the writers all come in and ask questions. It can last anywhere from 10 minutes to 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the day. And I try to get there when I can for a weekend pregames because the mechanics of my world is that I do a radio show in Columbia, Missouri, KTGR, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So I'm beating feet down to Busch Stadium. I do that from my house in O'Fallon, and then I'm immediately driving down to the ballpark and trying to make it there for first pitch. I usually make it there for about second pitch or get there in the bottom of the first. I'm typically walking from my parking spot past Ballpark Village. And there's like a bank there there's a big TV in the lobby. You guys know what I'm talking about? Next to the parking lot, one of the parking lots outside Ballpark Village. And so like across the street from the big white parking garage, big TV in the lobby. And so I'm kind of walking up. I've usually got MLB app on my phone going with the headphones and I'm looking, peering into the TV lobby going, all right, what's going on? Get there in the bottom of the first. So I'm not there for a lot of these pregames, but when I can be, I certainly try to be because again, I think you learn more and you know a little bit more about what's going on if you can get in the mix there and ask Ollie a question or two about, you know, some things that aren't happening. That's not on camera. That's what's so valuable about that. And it's difficult maybe for a fan to kind of know the lay of the land on how those things work, because they see the post games on Bally Sports Midwest, or, you know, the interviews that happen in the office setting or the podium setting with a camera on. And it's a different, you know, it's kind of a different vibe when it's just the writers. And anytime that I do get involved in those, I've got that audio. I don't play that audio for podcasts because that's not the purpose of those sessions, which is just kind of a nuanced thing that maybe some people would go, well, I don't really get it. But that's just kind of the difference, is that Ollie is able to be a little more unbuttoned because he knows, look, these quotes are going to be used for articles that the writers are putting out, but they're not playing this audio for their TV segment or radio show or whatever the case might be. So just a little bit of a different vibe to those moments. And I remember last year there was a discussion about Burleson, and I had been kind of like, you know, I don't know, Alec Burleson, I see it, but are they forcing the issue maybe a little bit too much at times? And then dug into it a little more and started really watching his at-bats more closely. And I started to see what the Cardinals were seeing. I think the guy's got a really interesting hit tool, and he was just a rookie last year, so developing. And I made the offhand comment, sort of just going back and forth in the group with Ollie, where I said, I'm coming around, I think, on Burleson, is what I told him. And he said, oh, you're coming around, like a little sarcastic, but fun. And everybody in the group kind of laughed, I think, you know, at my expense or just maybe at the comedy of the moment. You decide. No, I tease. It was fun where Ollie, you know, I was kind of giving it to him. He gives it back a little bit. And I was coming around on seeing what they were seeing in Alec Burleson and the ABs that he would take. And that extended into the spring, obviously had a good spring for the Cardinals. And then to the beginning of the season, you're having a little bit of that same story where, is it the bad luck? He's hitting into a little bit of bad luck, or maybe a few more strikeouts too so far this season to begin things for Alec Burleson compared to what the expectations would be there, because that was another hallmark of his game last year. Would be, you just look at the numbers and go, this guy doesn't ever strike out. That's not very common for a big league hitter in the modern era. But only 45 strikeouts last year in 107 major league games, 344 major league plate appearances, and was still a rookie last year because he had just 53 plate appearances down the stretch in 2022, where he just didn't hit much, had a 188 average. But last year played a pretty good amount. Like I said, 344 PAs, that's handily more than half a year, and only 45 strikeouts. If you're a guy who would pace 600 plate appearances and not strike out 100 times, you're sort of an anomaly in the modern game. And now as I'm looking at it for Burleson, that still might even be the pace that he's on right now. 54 plate appearances in 2024. Well, actually, no, that's not true, because I'm looking at this baseball reference number, and I think this is something they'll have to update. He's up to like 58 plate appearances or so, but did strike out a couple of times tonight. So he's pacing right around that probably 100 strikeouts over 600 PAs if he were to get to that number this year, which he won't. But playing a little more, I think that's part of the thought process when they send Victor Scott down and then, of course, send Jordan Walker down, is it's a direct, it really not Victor Scott, I should correct myself, because until they're willing to put Lars Nootbaar into center field, which I'm not suggesting they should do, I think it is important to maintain defense, especially on a game like tonight, because you know that Miles Michaelis is going to need every bit of that defense behind him most of the time, although it was a Brandon Crawford game at shortstop. And I will try to get into that a little bit, because I know people are still on the thing about Mason Winn, even though it's been public now about him having the back pain or the stiffness, and was given the choice. I saw this from Jeff Jones, who's out there in New York covering the road series for the Belleville News Democrat. He said Mason was given the choice. He went off Wednesday or Friday to give you that back-to-back at some point, because Thursday's off for the team. So you can double up and be able to maybe hopefully get over the back thing once and for all by having two consecutive days of rest. And he wanted to play on Wednesday against the lefty Montgomery, which is makes sense as a matchup for him, which put Crawford in against a right-handed starter tonight. And it just the way that it played out, Buto, I believe, is the name. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, of the starter. Jose Buto was the starter for the Mets tonight. But Crawford was in there at shortstop and stayed in there and took an at-bat late where some fans were going, why didn't they pinch hit for him? And it's like, well, I know the way that Twitter and social media and Cardinals fans in general might be viewing Brandon Crawford right now, which is like, oh, he's cooked. He doesn't have it anymore. And the Cardinals are wasting the at-bats when they give them to Brandon Crawford. And he did get a hit today. I don't know that my thing is, I don't think the Cardinals view it the same way, or at least they're not willing to act on it in the same way. People are like, well, why wouldn't Fermin take a late at bat so that the Cardinals can, you know, maybe take a run at trying to score some more, and then you can move Fermin to shortstop to finish the game. They don't really think Fermin is a defensive shortstop at this point. Just maybe not the arm for it, just more of a second baseman, third baseman, in terms of his profile defensively with what they're comfortable with. And Crawford has only ever played shortstop, and they're okay with it. Cardinals fans, anytime that Crawford gets into a lineup, they're looking for the earliest opportunity to get him out of that lineup in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, whatever the case might be. And I just want to reiterate, I don't think the Cardinals internally do view it that way. His role is to play for Mason Winn, and he doesn't need, he's a 10-year, 13-year veteran, whatever it is of Major League Baseball. And in their mind, the team's mind, doesn't need, you know, at the earliest possible moment to be swooped in and protected and taken out of the lineup so that, oh good, finally Crawford's out of the game. Like, they don't view it that way. I can understand if you're looking at his numbers going, well, he's hitting 118, he's got a 329 OPS, he looks a step slow defensively. I can understand if you have some criticisms of his play so far. And it's one of those things where, like, over the years there have been players like this in St. Louis where it's like, the guy hardly plays, so how much can we really kind of harp on it? How much is it even worth it to say, you know, out loud that this guy kind of, you know, struggling? But it's like Taylor Motter last year, but then Taylor Motter started to play a bunch, and so it became even more of a thing of like, okay, seriously, what's this guy doing here? Well, with Brandon Crawford, much more of a pedigree than Taylor Motter ever had, and not playing as much, but because of the Mason Winn back thing, playing even a little bit more than you would have expected in the early going. And my point is, the Cardinals aren't looking to rescue Crawford when he gets in there. I know the fan base would go, what's Ollie doing? No, it's by design. They are not trying to. They don't have the same goals as you. Now, if you get later into the season and it's just, you're over that kind of honeymoon period where it's like, okay, we're giving him the benefit of the doubt. He didn't have a full spring training, got hurt during spring training, missed a lot of reps. But then if it's like mid-season form and he's not in mid-season form, then they may view it differently and it may become an understanding. But you also have to understand the personnel and interpersonal side of it, where they sign this veteran player, they're not necessarily going to tell him, hey, dude, you kind of stink, and we're just going to only get you in where we kind of really need to, and we're going to get you out as early as we possibly can, just so we're not overexposed on having you on our team. That is, like, I was harsh there in how I said that, because I was almost embodying what I think Cardinal fans, at least the ones I hear from on social media, tend to think. That is not how they view Brandon Crawford. Maybe at some point it is, maybe it should be. But I'm just kind of sharing that for the time being, they don't view him through that prism. So that's why you don't see him exiting these starts early with very much frequency, because that's kind of not the way it was designed to be. That's not his role at this time. So that's a tangent, but it is something I wanted to make sure to cover, and I've efficiently done so. Well, I don't know about efficiently, but effectively I've done so. Let's double back now. We got into the Crawford conversation because I mentioned that you want to have the best defense possible with Miles Michaelis out there. They've continued to put Ciani out in center. The offense isn't very good. 460 OPS. He had 3 strikeouts today, but he brings a little je ne sais quoi and has some speed and plays a really good defensive center field. So he's playing a ton, right? Like, I think there were probably times during last season where I said, look, if you need a 40-man spot, Michael Ciani is not really part of your future. And that wasn't really fair because I didn't know enough about the guy to have said that. And now that I've seen a spring training with him and I have seen kind of the way that he commands it in center, I go, oh, okay, I see why they kept him, because he is defensively exactly what they have been craving, but they just need Tommy Edman out there because he can be that, and then also Tommy can provide league average offense at the big league level, which Michael Ciani decidedly as of right now doesn't seem to maybe have that club in his golf bag, to say it that way. But that's why the Cardinals are saying, look, we're prioritizing the defense thing because we see the impact it can have on our pitching staff in a good way, and we're going to be willing to basically take the zero at the 9-hole in the batting order. But not all zeros are created equal. Ciani's actually done a little more offensively than Victor Scott was doing, so you take that trade-off, and they're going to continue to run him out there, I feel like, for the time being. Now, could there be a point where they do decide to put Newt in center? Maybe. Newt's honestly struggling offensively now, though, a little bit. Went 0 for 4 tonight, down to a 200 average and a 654 OPS. The Cardinals offensively in this game overall didn't do a ton. Just 5 hits, 4 walks, and really after the early home runs that they hit, did nothing the rest of the night. So that's a little bit what I was kind of wanting to get into. It's like this win was, again, still that sort of style where you had to ride the rail and you felt a little bit uncomfortable with it the whole way through. Miles Michaelis is kind of dodging danger throughout the game, gave up 7 hits. Thank goodness didn't walk anybody. And I mentioned earlier, I said he gave up 2 home runs. He didn't. He gave up 1 home run. That's my fault for getting that wrong. So that means I got the total home runs that he's given up on the season wrong, too. I think he's given up 6, not 7, because I was looking at the 5 that he had given up and adding 2 to it. J.D. Martinez had another RBI hit that was not a home run. So that was the explanation for the 2 runs scored by the Mets. The other one was a home run by Tomas Nido, I believe, is who hit that one. And the catcher in the 9-hole batter. But my goodness, Nito's got an 1178 OPS this year. Went 2 for 3 in this one and hit the bomb. But anyway, Cardinals didn't do a lot offensively. Burleson came through. The 3-run homer was just absolutely crushed. Just a very powerful swing to right field for Alec Burleson. Weird little outfield setup there. It's not like Busch where they've got, you know, just bleachers right away and everywhere across the outfield but the batter's eye. There were not seats, but just like off of an awning there, just a bomb by Alec Burleson. And if you saw the swing, man, you know what I'm talking about. But it was important to cash in on that opportunity because when you get bases loaded or even 2 guys on bases was the case here, got to be able to cash in. And that still counts as a swing with runners in scoring position. Hitting a home run is not a bad thing. I think it's been something where Cardinal fans have kind of harped on, well, why can't they score without hitting homers? That's been a topic in previous years, but now it's even a worse topic so far this year, which is why can't they hit more homers? Because guess what? Homers are good. They lead to immediate runs. I've never considered it a problem to say, oh, they can't score unless they hit homers. As long as they're hitting homers, that's not actually a concern. That's more of a narrative street sort of thing that I don't subscribe to. And this year we have seen the Cardinals be able to do some small ball and do some different things. It's just been a rarity. They haven't scored enough. They haven't done it with enough frequency. And why haven't they scored enough runs? Because they haven't really been hitting homers. Combining the two would be the ideal world where you can score 6 or 7 runs in a game. Honestly, just call it 5. But you can maybe hit a home run or 2. Maybe it's not always a solo job. And then you might be able to do some small ball or put together some rallies to account for some other runs and score in multiple innings. Those are all the things that you'd like to see an offense do. And the Cardinals have, for, you know, the various reasons that we've covered, not really done that so far this year, but they hit the homer in the 2nd inning by Alec Burleson. And then freaking Wilson Contreras, man, this guy's got a 988 OPS. He's wearing that big old clown catcher's mitt, 36-inch catcher mitt, to try and figure things out with the hand. They asked him on the Apple TV postgame on the field how the hand was feeling during that. Obviously the hand not too bad during that home run, huh? And he kind of flashed a grin, gave a smile. Wilson Contreras, man, 296 batting average, 988 OPS. They're batting him 2nd. He's been the best hitter on the team, and it hasn't been close. Really good stuff so far from Wilson. Arenado, you know, he's kind of coming along, but the 717 OPS, that pales in comparison. Goldschmidt had another improvement of a night. He's creeping up there. Had a good swing, 1 for 3, had a hit, scored a run, also reached on a walk, no strikeouts, batting average up over 200. You know, baby steps right now. But Burleson and Contreras, they provided all the offense. If you're going to have a gripe, it's, look, you know, get more than 5 hits in a game. If you have 4 walks, you should be able to probably find a way to score more of them than just the ones that you did. But, you know, 4 runs on 9 base runners and being able to cash in on the homer a couple of times, that's good. You just don't want to give up, and not that they gave up, you just don't want to cash in and stop scoring after the 3rd inning. But in this case, they got enough pitching that they didn't end up needing any of that additional offense to come through to win this game. It's just, you're doing it in the same way where you go, okay, time for Jojo Romero to be an all-star again, time for Andrew Kittredge to be an all-star again, time for Ryan Helsley to be an all-star again. They did it. They're going to probably continue to do it for the time being. Bullpens are fickle, though, so I don't know if you can count on it forever in 2024. Inning in the 3rd for JoJo. Strikeout, no walks, no hits. 1.32 ERA. Kittredge got himself into a, not even a jam, just allows a base runner. and, you know, tidies his way out of it. 11 pitches in his inning that he threw in the eighth. 0.2, that'd be special. 0.82 ERA for Kittredge. 9 holds. And Helsley, 2 strikeouts, 102 mile per hour to end it. Goodbye. Go home. See ya. Peace out. Gone. 1-2-3, ninth inning. Cardinal bullpen, JoJo, Kittredge, Helsley is special. It is a special tier across Major League Baseball, what that group is doing at the back end of games. And it is a huge, huge, huge reason that the Cardinals are even in the position that they're in at 12-14 instead of in a spot much, much worse than that. There are worse places to be than 12-14 with the offense that the Cardinals have compiled. And don't look now, but they're only a half game back of the Pirates. That's right. The Pirates are coming back down to earth. And they should be ashamed of themselves if they don't get Paul Skenes to the big leagues sometime soon. Like, his next start should come for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's been really, really good. Here's a headline from 2 days ago. Skenes allows first run at AAA level. Strikes out 7 over 4 1/3. Paul Skenes, man. He's got a 0.5 ERA, 0.53 ERA. 34 strikeouts in 17 innings at AAA. Holy crap. This guy's been unbelievable. It's a tangent. I know it's not exactly Cardinal talk, but golly, man, get him up there. What are you doing? Speaking of get him up there, the Cardinals have a minor league pitcher that they need to promote, not to the big leagues, but it's time for him to bump levels after what he did tonight. Let's talk about it. Because last night I did the podcast on, you know, with the off day Thursday, I'm like, what the hell do I talk about? I'm like, let's just take a look at the prospects. I'll learn something by rolling through their box scores and their stats and see what's going on. And maybe, you know, we'll learn something together. And went through the top 30 prospects and how they're performing. Some of them are hurt. Some of them haven't done anything. Some of them are having nice starts to the season. And so check that out. Scroll back on the B-Shape Daily podcast feed or on the YouTube channel if you missed it. Quinn Matthews, draft pick out of Stanford. He's the kid that had 156 pitch complete game where he struck out like 16 College World Series or the bracket before the College World Series, whatever the case was. 156 pitches in a game, and that was just a story nationally at the time, in the era of like protecting kids' arms and you know, not wanting to blow them out. It was kind of shocking to see that. And I remember talking about this on the big show on KTGR with my co-host Andy Humphrey. We're like, what's that going to do to his draft stock? Our team's going to look at that and go, yeah, from that one night, he's off our board. You know, we're not going to consider him as a result of just, it feels like that's a recipe for disaster. But Quinn Matthews, 23 years old, have a start to the season, why don't you, for low A Palm Beach. Cardinals drafted him last year out of Stanford and basically said, hey, chill for the rest of the year. You threw 156 pitches. You pitched really deep into the college playoffs. He had a 4.26 runs against average. The ERA was 3.75 last year as a senior for Stanford. He was a four-year collegiate pitcher. 19 games, 18 starts, 124 2/3 innings. Like, we're talking about just trying to get Tink Hentz up over the hill to 100 innings this year for the first time. And Quinn Matthews logged 124 last year in college. So the Cardinals drafted him in July and said, hey, buddy, you're good. we'll do whatever we'll do with you. But they didn't have him pitch in the minors the rest of the way. And now he's starting out at low A Palm Beach. And after what he did last night, I think high A Peoria. Peoria beckons for Quinn Matthews. Or not last night. As I say this, it's tonight. The number 21 prospect in the organization, according to MLB Pipeline. 13 strikeouts in 6 scoreless innings for Quinn Matthews. Tall drink of water, left-handed starter, 6'5", 188. That's how he's listed here on Baseball Reference. Turns 24 in October. So, all right, yep, we've seen enough at low A. Get to Peoria. Because for a 23-year-old, you kind of want to elevate him pretty quickly, right? Like, 4-year college pitcher, if he passes the eye test at the lower level, you bump him. If he passes it again, you bump him. And you, like, be aggressive, I would say, with his promotion as far as maybe getting him to Springfield by season's end or by midseason and seeing what you have there. Because, again, a guy like Paul Skenes was just pitching in college last year, but he pitches several years in college. There is a more obvious track to get him to the big leagues faster, and he's dicing up AAA. Now, he's one of one. Paul Skeens is built different. But Quinn Matthews, dude, don't overlook this guy. And how about this? Was drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays in 2022 before saying, nope, I'm going to Stanford. Or I guess that would have been, he was a junior in that 2022 draft and said, I'm going back for my senior season at Stanford. That's what it was. And then got drafted in 2023 by the Cardinals. Now, that was not Heim Bloom's Tampa Bay Rays, but I know the way that everybody talks about the Rays and belief in their development and the way that they identify talent. So the Rays were in on him in the 19th round the previous year, and he said, no, I'm going to build my stock a little bit more, and was able to do that with just, again, maybe that 156-pitch thing. Cardinals go, hey, we've got a gamer on our hands. We want to draft guys that can go deep, can ride the wave deeper into a start. Quinn Matthews, man. He seems to be built for it. Fourth-round pick last year out of Stanford. 13 Ks. That's the thing. You want swing and miss, you got it. Prior to tonight's start, he was a 0.75 ERA in 12 innings, 25 Ks. Now he's thrown 18 innings, has 38 strikeouts. That's bonkers. Get him to high A. It's time. That needs to be his swan song in low A. He might like Palm Beach. He might like Crux Coffee down there, but it's time to get him up to Peoria. So, and it used to be the other way. It used to be Peoria was low A. High A was you'd go down to Palm Beach as a promotion. But that's just like a different, that Palm Beach is a different league. The wind all year in the Florida State League, and it's just a little bit of a different kind of league. So I think you get better, probably consistent data on what a guy is by playing in the Peoria Chiefs ballpark. Anyway, Dozier Park, I believe that's called. So Quinn Matthews wanted to update everybody on that. And I wanted to talk about the Ryan Helsley streak that continues. So I think I've gotten to everything I wanted to get to tonight. Haven't talked about Seth Lugo being a stud for the Royals. That's irrelevant to your interests, but was one of those guys that I think in the offseason you go, okay, yeah, sure, Seth Lugo, they could sign him. The Royals said, yeah, let's sign him. 3 years, $45 million. He's got a 1.6 ERA. He's been a stud. He's been a stud. And the Royals, don't look now, but they're like 17-10. Yeah. They're having a great, great run of things so far this season. But the Cardinals, they get a couple more wins here. They get one on Wednesday, get one on Friday. We'll see. It's another sunny day. I don't know what the weather forecast is in St. Louis, but it's a sunny day. Sonny Gray will pitch, I think, 3 p.m. Game's going to be on Fox 2 in St. Louis. So we go from having really a non-accessible game on Friday night on Apple TV for a lot of people if they don't subscribe or folks who just don't do the smart TV stuff and don't want to figure it out, to it's free to watch this game. Whether you have anything, there's no blackouts, it's impossible. Get yourself a digital antenna, and you can watch the game Saturday afternoon, national broadcast, as the Cardinals will be on Fox 2. And then you get the Cat & Co. back on Sunday with only one Bally Sports game for this Mets series. Mets. Every time I hear Mets, and I've talked about this on the radio recently, I hear the name Mets, and I instantly think of Frank Thomas in that World Series post-game wrap-up the year the Royals beat the Mets. And I wonder what the quickest way for me to be able to find this would be on YouTube. Oh, I can find it because it's already on my... I just played it here a second. I'll play it for you guys. It's already on my history because I've been pulling this up and showing people because it's funny. He basically, you know, who is that? Kevin Millar, whoever it is, throws to him and he gives his thoughts on the World Series and the way that he says Mets before this objectively hilarious comment makes me laugh. If you've heard this before, you're about to hear it again. If you haven't heard it, strap in. It's a fun one. Here it is. Frank Thomas, you'll hear talking about the Mets and how they were unable to beat the Royals back in whatever that was, 2015.
Have a bright future. The Mets have nothing to hold their heads down for, except they didn't play that well, and they gave away this World Series.
Well, other than that, Frank, I mean, goodness. Mets, well, they have nothing to hold their heads down for except, well, they didn't play that well, and they did give away the World Series. But other than that, everything was pretty much standard from them this week. Yeah, all right. Okay, sure. But the Cardinals beat the Mets on Friday, and you get one Bally Sports Midwest game with the Mets. And I didn't catch the Cat, unfortunately, on Friday on Hot Take Central. It's been a couple of weeks that him and I have been passing like two ships in the night, so hopefully next Friday he'll be back in town, but he'll be coming off that road trip. So hopefully he'll be in the studio there, and I'll get to catch up with my buddy, the Cat, But I don't think I'll have any Cardinals content to post from that show from Friday morning on 590 The Fan. I'm in there on Fridays, 7 to 10 a.m. Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Cam Jansen, former Blues enforcer, doing a radio show. But it's kind of a rotating cast when Cat's on the road and stuff like that. So we had Nate Lucas in there with us today and did not have the Cat. Didn't end up really talking much baseball because those guys talked, you know, Wednesday's game on Thursday, and I wasn't in there. And then I get in there Friday, and it's like there's not really anything new to talk about when the Cardinals keep being off on Thursday. So probably not a lot to throw to this channel, but if you want to hear some non-Cardinals content at some point, I might. The segments that I think are funny or interesting, I'll throw up here on YouTube from time to time. 590 said they're cool with me doing that. So anyway, that's really all I've got for tonight, folks. Appreciate you guys for listening. As always, make sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't yet on YouTube. We soared past 3,000 subs, and now we're advancing. But I'd like to get to 500 followers on Spotify. So if you want the Spotify link, again, there is also a way to then join a paid subscription program and listen to the shows ad-free, which I don't know how much people are bothered by the ads on YouTube. Again, it's just part of the game that I have to do them. But there is a way that you could say, yeah, I want B-Shape Daily. I just want it to be ad-free. Well, there is a way to do that. Check out the link in the description of this episode if you're interested in that. But that is going to do it for this edition of the show. Sunny day on Saturday. We'll talk about it after the fact. Maybe a live stream day. I don't know. Probably not. It's just kind of hard with those afternoon games. I feel like there are like 10 of you who go, yeah, live stream. But then in reality, it's not, the juice is not end up being worth the squeeze because there's not quite as many people that are in on that. People are doing their thing, living their lives on a Saturday. So maybe we'll just kind of see how it plays out tomorrow. But that'll do it for this edition of the show. Appreciate you guys as always. And we'll talk to you next time on B-Shape Daily. Peace.